It was 2019 when the New York Times Magazine launched the 1619 Project. The project was named for the date of the arrival of the first enslaved Africans in the American colonies. The series won the Pulitzer Prize and prompted an examination of slavery's role in shaping life in the U.S. Commentator and Wellesley College Associate Professor Kelly Carter Jackson was captivated by the project. As we mark the 10th anniversary of WBUR's Ideas and Opinions page, here's her essay about her family's experience.
I have a picture of my grandmother, Ethel Phillips, posing with the great-granddaughter of her employer. The picture was taken in the early 1990s. The child is looking up at my grandmother as she smiles into the camera. They are both holding small American flags. My grandmother is wearing a light blue dress. Actually, it was her uniform. For 59 years, Ethel was a domestic worker. She spent 43 of those years working for several generations of one family in Dearborn, Michigan. Her servitude to that family has gripped me for years, partially because her story is so common among women of her generation. Ethel was born in 1919 in Louisiana. She was the fifth of 16 children and raised in Mississippi. She was quiet, shy, and smart, the valedictorian of her eighth grade class, though she never attended high school. When I asked her why, she always responded, "The school was too far away." She didn't know at the time, but there were only a handful of public schools in the Jim Crow South that Black children were allowed to attend to learn a classical education. Ethel worked in her family's farm until she was 21. Then she moved north, joining her older brothers and sisters in a town near Detroit. The car industry was booming in the mid-20th century, and Detroit held the promise of better employment, a better wage, and a better life. But for many Black women, domestic labor was the only job they could find once they arrived. In fact, as of 1960, one-third of all African-American women who worked were employed by a household. Domestic work was difficult labor and required significant time away from their own families. Plus, those jobs offered no unemployment benefits or workers' compensation or pensions or Social Security. My grandmother worked well into her old age because she couldn't afford to retire. Ask any member of the family my grandmother worked for, and they will tell you they adored her. One told me, "She didn't work for us. She was a member of the family." But that word, family, always troubled me, because everything about Ethel's labor reflected racial and economic subordination. Everywhere she went, Ethel was known as Mrs. Phillips, but to her employers and their children, she was just Ethel. Even after her death, members of the family asked me, "What was her last name?" After her funeral, another member of the family wrote a letter to me. He told me how he kept a picture of my grandmother inside his laundry cabinet. He used it as inspiration. He wrote, "Every time I reached for the Tide detergent, I knew I could do it all too." The sheer imagery of his recollection suggests he couldn't separate Ethel's work or humanity from a commodity. For him, my grandmother was a proverbial Mrs. Clean, who came to life and befriended him during childhood. When my grandmother finally stopped working, she was 79. Her story is not unique. In fact, it is representative of many marginalized Americans and undocumented workers today. It explains why cultivating generational wealth was and is so crucially important. My grandmother could not build financial stability from her wages. The family was kind, but kindness is not enough. To this day, there are no federal protections for domestic workers. The system that prevents retirement, promotes subordination, and offers no protection persists. Ethel's work was valuable. Some might even say essential. The work she did for six decades, the work millions of people do today, deserves safeguards, mobility, and dignity.
I believe, I believe, I do believe. just there.